Chapter 2. Westward of the lizards. Then the wind went round to the southwest, and began to pipe up. In 2 days it blew a gale. The Judea hove to, wallowed on the Atlantic like an old candle box. It blew day after day. It blew with spite, without interval, without mercy, without rest. The world was nothing but an immensity of great foaming waves rushing at us, under a sky low enough to touch with the hand and dirty like a smoked ceiling. In the stormy space surrounding us there was as much flying spray as air. Day after day and night after night there was nothing round the ship but the howl of the wind, the tumult of the sea, the noise of water pouring over her deck. There was no rest for her, and no rest for us. She tossed, she pitched, she stood on her head, she sat on her tail, she rolled, she groaned, and we had to hold on while on deck, and cling to our bunks when below, in a constant effort of body and worry of mind. One night man spoke through the small window of my berth. It opened right into my very bed, and I was lying there sleepless, in my boots, feeling as though I had not slept for years, and could not if I tried. He said excitedly, "You got the sounding rod in here, Marlowe? I can't get the pumps to suck. By God! It's no child's play." Apostrophe, I gave him the sounding rod, and lay down again, trying to think of various things, but I thought only of the pumps. When I came on deck they were still at it, and my watch relieved at the pumps. By the light of the lantern brought on deck, to examine the sounding rod I caught a glimpse of their weary, serious faces. We pumped all the 4 hours. We pumped all night, all day, all the week, watch and watch. She was working herself loose, and leaked badly not enough to drown us at once, but enough to kill us with the work at the pumps. And while we pumped the ship was going from us piecemeal. The bulwarks went, the stanchions were torn out, the ventilators smashed, the cabin door burst in. There was not a dry spot in the ship. She was being gutted bit by bit. The longboat changed, as if by magic, into matchwood where she stood in her gripes. I had lashed her myself, and was rather proud of my handiwork, which had withstood so long the malice of the sea. And we pumped. And there was no break in the weather. The sea was white like a sheet of foam, like a cauldron of boiling milk. There was not a break in the clouds, no, not the size of a man's hand, no, not for so much as 10 seconds. There was for us no sky, there were for us no stars, no sun, no universe, nothing but angry clouds and an infuriated sea. We pumped watch and watch, for dear life, and it seemed to last for months, for years, for all eternity, as though we had been dead, and gone to a hell for sailors. We forgot the day of the week, the name of the month, what year it was, and whether we had ever been ashore. The sails blew away, she lay broadside on under a weather cloth, the ocean poured over her, and we did not care. We turned those handles, and had the eyes of idiots. As soon as we had crawled on deck I used to take a round turn with a rope about the men, the pumps, and the mainmast, and we turned incessantly, with the water to our waists, to our necks, over our heads. It was all one. We had forgotten how it felt to be dry. And there was somewhere in me the thought, by Jove, this is the deuce of an adventure, something you read about. And it is my first voyage as second mate, and I am only 20, and here I am lasting it out as well as any of these men, and keeping my chaps up to the mark. I was pleased. I would not have given up the experience for worlds. I had moments of exultation. Whenever the old dismantled craft pitched heavily with her counter high in the air, she seemed to me to throw up, like an appeal, like a defiance, like a cry to the clouds without mercy, the words written on her stern. Judea, London. Do or die. Apostrophe, O youth. The strength of it, the faith of it, the imagination of it. To me she was not an old rattle-trap carting about the world a lot of coal for a freight. To me, she was the endeavor, the test, the trial of life. I think of her with pleasure, with affection, with regret as you would think of someone dead you have loved. I shall never forget her. Pass the bottle. One night when tied to the mast, as I explained, we were pumping on, deafened with the wind, and without spirit enough in us to wish ourselves dead, a heavy sea crashed aboard and swept clean over us. As soon as I got my breath I shouted, as in duty bound, "Keep on, boys!" When suddenly I felt something hard floating on deck strike the calf of my leg. I made a grab at it and missed. It was so dark we could not see each other's faces within a foot, you understand. After that thump, the ship kept quiet for a while, and the thing, whatever it was, struck my leg again. This time I caught it, and it was a saucepan. At first, being stupid with fatigue and thinking of nothing but the pumps, I did not understand what I had in my hand. Suddenly it dawned upon me, and I shouted, "Boys, the house on deck is gone. Leave this, and let's look for the cook." There was a deck house forward, which contained the galley, the cook's berth, and the quarters of the crew. As we had expected for days, to see it swept away, the hands had been ordered to sleep in the cabin, the only safe place in the ship. The steward, Abraham, however, persisted in clinging to his berth, stupidly, like a mule from sheer fright I believe, like an animal that on leave a stable falling in an earthquake. So we went to look for him. It was chancing death, since once out of our lashings we were as exposed as if on a raft. But we went. The house was shattered, as if a shell had exploded inside. Most of it had gone overboard, stove, men's quarters, and their property, all was gone, but two posts, holding a portion of the bulkhead to which Abraham's bunk was attached, remained as if by a miracle. We groped in the ruins, and came upon this, and there he was, sitting in his bunk, surrounded by foam and wreckage, jabbering cheerfully to himself. He was out of his mind, completely and forever mad, with this sudden shock coming upon the fag end of his endurance. We snatched him up, lugged him aft, and pitched him head first down the cabin companion. You understand there was no time to carry him down with infinite precautions and wait to see how he got on. Those below would pick him up at the bottom of the stairs all right. We were in a hurry to go back to the pumps. That bus-iness could not wait. A bad leak is an inhuman thing. One would think that the sole purpose of that fiendish gale had been to make a lunatic of that poor devil of a mulatto. It eased before morning, and next day the sky cleared, and as the sea went down the leak took up. When it came to bending a fresh set of sails the crew demanded to put back, and really there was nothing else to do. Boats gone, decks swept clean, cabin gutted, men without a stitch, but what they stood in, stores spoiled, ship strained. We put her head for home, and would you believe it? The wind came east right in our teeth. It blew fresh, it blew continuously. We had to beat up every inch of the way, but she did not leak so badly, the water keeping comparatively smooth. 2 hours pumping in every four is no joke, but it kept her afloat as far as Falmouth. The good people there live on casualties of the sea, and no doubt were glad to see us. A hungry crowd of shipwrights sharpened their chisels at the sight of that carcass of a ship. And, by Jove, they had pretty pickings off us before they were done. I fancy the owner was already in a tight place. There were delays. Then it was decided to take part of the cargo out and caulk her topsides. This was done, the repairs finished, cargo reshipped, a new crew came on board, and we went out for Bangkok. At the end of a week we were back again. The crew said they weren't going to Bangkok, a 150 days passage in a something hooker that wanted pumping 8 hours out of the 24, and the nautical papers inserted again the little paragraph. Judia. Bark. Tyne to Bangkok. Coals. Put back to Falmouth leaky, and with crew refusing duty. apostrophe, apostrophe, there were more delays, more tinkering. The younger came down for a day, and said she was as right as a little fiddle. Poor old Captain Beard looked like a ghost of a Geordie, skipper through the worry and humiliation of it. Remember, he was 60, and it was his first command. Man said it was a foolish business, and would end badly. I loved the ship more than ever, and wanted awfully to get to Bangkok. To Bangkok. Magic name, bless name. Mesopotamia wasn't a patch in it. Remember, I was 20, and it was my first second mate billet, and the East was waiting for me. We went out and anchored in the Outer Roads with a fresh crew the third. She leaked worse than ever. It was as if those confounded shipwrights had actually made a hole in her. This time we did not even go outside. The crew simply refused to man the windlass. They towed us back to the inner harbor, and we became a fixture, a feature, an institution of the place. People pointed us out to visitors as that ear bark that's going to Bangkok, has been here 6 months, put back 3 times. Apostrophe, apostrophe, on holidays the small boys pulling about in boats would hail, Judea, ahoy! Apostrophe, apostrophe, and if a head showed above the rail shouted, where you bound to? Bangkok? Apostrophe, apostrophe, and jeered. We were only 3 on board. The poor old skipper mooned in the cabin. Man undertook the cooking, and unexpectedly developed all a Frenchman's genius for preparing nice little messes. I looked languidly after the rigging. We became citizens of Falmouth. Every shopkeeper knew us. At the barbers or tobacconists they asked familiarly, do you think you will ever get to Bangkok? Apostrophe, apostrophe, meantime the owner, the underwriters, and the charterers squabbled amongst themselves in London, and our pay went on. Dot dot dot, pass the bottle. It was horrid. Morally it was worse than pumping for life. It seemed as though we had been forgotten by the world, belonged to nobody, would get nowhere. It seemed that, as if bewitched, we would have to live forever and ever in that inner harbor, a derision and a byword to generations of longshore loafers and dishonest boatmen. I obtained 3 months' pay and a 5 days' leave, and made a rush for London. It took me a day to get there and pretty well another to come back, but 3 months' pay went all the same. I don't know what I did with it. I went to a music hall, I believe, lunched, dined, and supped in a swell place in Regent Street, and was back to time, with nothing but a complete set of Byron's works and a new railway rug, to show for 3 months' work. The boatman who pulled me off to the ship said, hello. I thought you had left the old thing. She will never get to Bangkok. Apostrophe, apostrophe, that's all you know about it. Apostrophe, I said scornfully, but I didn't like that prophecy at all. Suddenly a man, some kind of agent to somebody, appeared with full powers. He had grog blossoms all over his face, an indomitable energy, and was a jolly soul. We leaped into life again. A hulk came alongside, took our cargo, and then we went into dry dock to get our copper stripped. No wonder she leaked. The poor thing, strained beyond endurance by the gale, had, as if in disgust, spat out all the oakum of her lower seams. She was recocked, new coppered, and made as tight as a bottle. We went back to the hulk and reshipped our cargo. Then on a fine moonlight night, all the rats left the ship. We had been infested with them. They had destroyed our sails, consumed more stores than the crew, affably shared our beds and our dangers, and now, when the ship was made seaworthy, concluded to clear out. I called man to enjoy the spectacle. Rat after rat appeared on our rail, took a last look over his shoulder, and leaped with a hollow thud into the empty hulk. We tried to count them, but soon lost the tale. Man said, well, well, don't talk to me about the intelligence of rats. They ought to have left before, when we had that narrow squeak from foundering. There you have the proof, how silly is the superstition about them. They leave a good ship for an old rotten hulk, where there is nothing to eat to, the fools. I don't believe they know what is safe or what is good for them, any more than you or I ... and after some more talk we agreed that the wisdom of rats had been grossly overrated, being in fact no greater than that of men. The story of the ship was known, by this, all up the channel from Land's End to the Forelands, and we could get no crew on the south coast. They sent us one all complete from Liverpool, and we left once more for Bangkok. We had fair breezes, smooth water right into the tropics, and the old Judy lumbered along in the sunshine. When she went 8 knots everything cracked aloft, and we tied our caps to our heads, but mostly she strolled on at the rate of 3 miles an hour. What could you expect? She was tired, that old ship. Her youth was where mine is, where yours is, you fellows who listen to this yarn. And what friend would throw your years and your weariness in your face? We didn't grumble at her. To us aft, at least, it seemed as though we had been born in her, reared in her, had lived in her for ages, had never known any other ship. I would just as soon have abused the old village church at home for not being a cathedral. And for me there was also my youth, to make me potent. There was all the East before me, and all life, and the thought that I had been tried in that ship and had come out pretty well. And I thought of men of old who, centuries ago, went that road in ships that sailed no better, to the land of palms, and spices, and yellow sands, and of brown nations ruled by kings more cruel than Nero the Roman, and more splendid than Solomon the Jew. The old bark lumbered on, heavy with her age and the burden of her cargo, while I lived the life of youth in ignorance and hope. She lumbered on through an interminable procession of days, and the fresh gilding flashed back at the setting sun, seemed to cry out over the darkening sea the words painted on her stern, Judea, London. Do or die. Then we entered the Indian Ocean, and steered northerly for Java Head. The winds were light. Weeks slipped by. She crawled on, do or die, and people at Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.